As 3312 gets going at Hutton, the decorations are put away for another year. The Christmas brain tree is taken down from the parade and put back on the side of the station, but it will flourish in the cold, empty void of space. All of the 3311 calendars have been taken down and replaced by 3312 ones, with particular favourites being the Ladies of Lacon calendar, for those who admire matronly, no-nonsense women in boiler suits, and the Laddies of Lacon calendar, for those who like beer bellies and vests with a bit of egg stain on them. Either way, they are a feast for the eyes, and just like a feast, too much Lacon calendar can leave you feeling a bit queasy. All of the paper, baubles, Happy New Year banners, novelty mugs, cranberry sauce, fake snow, real snow, cloned reindeer and mince pies are fed into trash compactors, ready for recycling. The place looks a bit bare now. No more flashy coloured lights, unless you stand outside Wanda's. No more carol singing, unless you go to karaoke you like, where Carol sings every Tuesday. And no more snowball fights since the life support came back on. Everyone falls into the routine of work and home life for another year, trudging between their usual haunts on the station. But it's not all shuffling and drudgery and mind-numbing numbness. Some parts of the Hutton routine are awful.
Our mics are live. And welcome to tonight's show. I'm Sandy Crevis and I'm still in party mode. Those special protein bars coming out of the recycling machine are really delicious.
I'm Wilma Fingadoo. Lang may your lum reek. That's Scottish for wishing you good gastrointestinal health.
I'm Mia Harkness and I still have steak pie left over from Hogmanay. Gone yourself.
I'm Norma Stockers, and they do say that the air goes faster as you get older. Yeah, it'll be next Christmas before I know it.
I'm Mike Rochburns, and I'm really grateful for our low-gravity station right now. I ate everything with gravy. Even a tub of roses. Gravy.
I'm Hugh Pratt. And after a rather wild party, I'm still stuck up on this chandelier, which raises the twin questions of how I got up here and who installed a chandelier on the station in the first place.
I think we'd better get on with the headlines for the first time of 3312. Bong.
How to Train Your Barman by Cecil.
Bong.
Nocti instigates coup d'etat, which is French for coup d'etat.
Not meant to be CGs.
Seasonal expansion causes stretch marks.
She Santa strips ships for scrap.
And I round up the New Year BGS stuff.
Cecil is a git. A new git. Officially a git. But as we all know, gits need to be trained. After the recent news of being given the official job title of Gin Inspection Tester of the Centauri Megagin production line, Cecil put forward a request to become a fully certificated git. Certificated is sophisticated but with a certificate. It was decided that it was a superb idea by all at the station for a number of reasons. The first being that Cecil was being such a git that output of gin had dipped over the festive period when supply was needed at its most. The second was that whilst the course was expensive due to its location in a high-class imperial system, it was an all-you-can-drink type event. So the decision was made, and off we sent Cecil, the lucky git, to be the Imperial's problem for a while. We did, however, get some interesting butt dials during his time on the training course, with overheard statements including,
"I say, this drink is like a ninja. It looks like lemon, it tastes like lemon, but now I can't see."
And,
"One, two, three, four."
And perhaps most concerningly,
I might need to teach you my person ninja to maybe do a half measure."
Could it be someone has found the limit of Cecil? It's unclear. What is also unclear is why Cecil chose to get out of a perfectly serviceable seafaring craft to take a swim with sharks. Not that we on Hutton know what a shark is, unless it's a vacuum cleaner robot, and we don't recommend swimming with those. It goes tingly and sparkly, and floor mopping guy gets cross for some reason. The beluga returning Cecil from his trip made great time on its return to Hutton, only for the pilot to have forgotten Hutton only has medium pads. In seemingly unrelated news, war broke out in the system as Cecil departed, leaving us asking the question, is our git a spy? Git spy? Spy git? Nah.
On the subject of wars, Nocti has initiated a coup against Vantion 21, as he was ousted from control in the Hot Squadron. Reasons for this are confused at this time, with a number of commentators weighing in on this matter of significant geopolitical impact. Whilst accompanying Cecil on his git course, seemingly aiming for the same qualifications, 21 was removed from the squadron by Nocti as he assumed control during his shore leave. Some are seeing this as an opportunistic event where Nocti has taken control of the squadron for his own gain. When asked what this gain might be, the suggestees look down and scuff their mug boots on the floor. Another theory on this incident is a misfile of paperwork. Rather than filling in the annual leave form, 21, in fact, filed out the retirement leave form, possibly in the hope of an extended holiday. This caused great panic among the ECM regular commanders, who were now unsure how to meet other commanders. This theory was quickly disproven as Alvin barked angrily and chewed up some paperwork, making pretty little snowflakes. One outlandish idea put forward was that 21 never existed and was in fact a hologram. However, this was quickly disproven, as no one has ever seen an H on Vantion's forehead. The proposer of that preposterous idea was promptly slapped. We reached out to Nocti for comment and got a slightly panicked reply.
"I'm in this really hot seat. I'm not sure why, but it chose me. In my panic and attempt to avoid being the chosen one, I hit some buttons. At first, I thought I had ejected Cecil, but now I'm realizing it was 21.
Then, in a slightly more relaxed tone after the situation was explained,
"Oh, thank goodness. I thought I'd ejected him into space, not from the squadron. By the way, can you ask him how to turn the heated seat off?"
Normality will resume shortly, and Vantion will be returned to the now slightly sweaty hot seat.
This week sees the return of community goals after an absence of weeks and weeks. Now, I won't spoil it by giving the details just at the moment, but here are some of the ideas that didn't make it through quality control. Bubble bake-off. This involves pilots being invited to turn up at Baked Analysis Centre in Kojak, who loves you, baby, with rare and exotic ingredients to bake a cake in zero-G conditions. the resulting creations would be judged by a panel of gastronauts. 60-minute asteroid makeover. A dreary asteroid base is given a fabulous makeover while its owners are out at the shops. Commanders are rewarded for delivering truly awful items of station furniture to the asteroid for installation. This goal will last for one standard hour. Station, location, location, location. Sometimes your local planet just doesn't have the parking spaces or easy access to shipping lanes, or maybe you just need a move. Pilots are rewarded for delivering exploration data from interesting or particularly beautiful systems. The options will be considered by an overly ambitious but underfunded couple before they decide not to move after all. It was going to be grand space designs, but everyone got pregnant, even the robots. Bubble Bargain Hunt. Commanders with a budget of 1,000 credits collect 3 items of tat from stations around the bubble, which they attempt to sell at the commodity market on Wallacott Station. Those who lose the least money win and get to keep all of the crap that the other commanders bought. No, best to stick to traditional formats for community goals, and I'll be back with more of those later.
Hutton Orbital Logistics Division have flagged a peculiar development in the wake of the festive season. Reports indicate a significant belt surge across the galaxy. Eager miners feeling that their time had come to a palladium, void opals, and of course, Bertandite, locating days were heading back to mining millions heydays. They wanted to earn lots of money. On arrival with their first load of painite, they discovered the prices were normal. Demand was above average, and there was, on the face of it, nothing to the rumour. That was until they stepped into the Hutton mess hall and saw a post-dinner suit relaxation routine being enjoyed by a number of the truckers whom the old adage, eyes bigger than their stomach, was possibly not true. With a number of rather expensive adjectives being used on this menu this year to describe how big a portion the average Hutton trucker was looking forward to, it became rapidly evident that your average Maverick suit was not designed for this kind of ectomorph to endomorph adjustment your average trucker undergoes at this sort of time of year. Tailors across Hutton controlled systems report a run of reinforced mag belts and adaptive suspenders. Several manufacturers of zero-G flight suits have introduced a new line featuring stretch nanofabrics, capable of accommodating what one insider describes as dynamic expansions. Some particularly ambitious designers have marketed suits with integrated anti-grav braces to counter the strain. Though early reviews suggest that they may have inadvertently cause a bouncy castle effect in low-G environments. The elasticated solutions have also reached cockpit outfitting with demands for wider pilot seats at an all-time high. Certain shipyards now offer XXL class ergonomic rigs and an optional Type 10 super heavy seating module, complete with adjustable armrests and built-in dip trays. The cumulative increase in mass has raised concerns about the delicate balance of Hutton Orbital itself. A senior engineer noted that while individual gains are negligible, the aggregate weight of returning pilots has placed unprecedented strain on the station's stabilization thrusters.
There's a very real danger,
they explained,
that if this trend continues, Hutton Orbital may find itself nudged into a slightly lower orbit. That would wreak havoc on docking routines, not to mention sending the gin distillery into an unplanned barrel roll.
Leerwulf has reportedly convened an emergency meeting to assess the situation. Preliminary solutions include ejecting ballast modules or temporarily relocating station's heaviest patrons to a nearby surface settlement. The demand for larger attire and cockpit modifications has created an unexpected opportunity for entrepreneuring traders. Bulk shipments of stretch nanofabrics, reinforced seating frames, and multi-point restraint systems are flooding markets. Meanwhile, several commanders have taken to installing uprated cargo bays in their trousers to manage both girth and snacks. A spokesperson of the League of Hutton Chefs and Sommeliers noted,
"While we take no responsibility for the festive consumption that has driven this surge, we are introducing low-calorie variants, though we can't guarantee they will taste any less like singed rocket fuel."
Hutton administration has introduced several initiatives aimed at curbing the festive aftermath. Chef amongst these is... Chief among these is Operation Centauri Slim, a series of zero-G aerobatic classes and asteroid-chasing challenges designed to encourage healthier habits. Participation is optional, though the newly reinforced gantries in the gymnasium suggest otherwise. On a more serious note, engineers continue to monitor the station systems for any lasting effects, with contingency plans in place to prevent it from toppling over.
What began as a heartwarming holiday tradition has taken a darker turn as Sandra Kors, the celebrated organizer of the annual festive event Sandra's Workshop, faces accusations of a decidedly less charitable nature. High-profile break-ins targeting the accommodation blocks of event participants have led some to suspect that Kors herself may be behind the crimes, using her goodwill enterprise as a cover for a galactic crime syndicate. For years, Sandra's Workshop has been a beacon of festive joy. Pilots flock to her aid, where they craft customized modules in a spirit of camaraderie and holiday cheer. However, this year's event has been overshadowed by a string of burglaries at the accommodations of those who signed up for deliveries on behalf of her workshop. Victims report returning from their delivery sessions to find empty quarters, stripped of valuables, and, most alarmingly, prized ship modules.
"I went to a workshop to add some festive flair to the day, of a few needy nippers,"
said Commander Brightspark.
"By the time I got back, my Guardian FSD booster was gone, my plasma accelerator was missing, and someone had eaten all the biscuits I left on the counter. I mean, who does that?"
Initial theories suggested Sandra was, on the face of it, a benevolent cross between Mother Claus, Robin Hood, and those funeral firms that give you a free pen just for calling them, redistributing cheer during the festive season. However, investigators now believe the operation to be far more sinister, with mounting evidence linking Sandra Kors herself to the thefts.
"She knows exactly when and where her participants are,"
said a representative of the Pilots Federation Security Division.
"If you wanted to stage the perfect heist, having your victims enthusiastically sign up and tell you when they'll be out of the house is a great start."
A forensic team examining one of the break-in sites uncovered a calling card left behind, a candy cane snapped in two. While some have dismissed this as coincidence, others pointed out that the broken candy cane matches the logo of the Kors Kamori, a shadowy criminal syndicate long suspected of operating within the bubble. Not all pilots are taking the allegations lying down. A self-organized vigilante group calling themselves the Workshop Watchdogs has formed to monitor accommodation blocks during workshop sessions. Their motto, "Craft Now, Thief Later," highlights their commitment to protecting their fellow commanders. Meanwhile, local station authorities are advising pilots to secure their ship modules in high-security hangars, or even store them in alternative systems while attending the workshop. Kors vehemently denied the accusations, describing them as
A Grinch-like attempt to tarnish the holiday spirit.
In a carefully worded statement, she said,
"The workshop is about bringing people together and sharing the joy of craftsmanship. These baseless accusations are the work of cynics who can't handle the festive cheer."
However, when asked directly about her potential connections to the cause Komori, she ended the interview abruptly, citing,
"An urgent pudding-related emergency."
Whether or not Sandra Krause is truly the mastermind behind the break-ins remains unproven, but the incidents have cast a shadow over the holiday festivities. Pilots are urged to take precautions, lock their accommodation doors, and maybe rethink leaving rare modules lying around. As one investigator dryly remarked,
"If it looks like a candy cane and steals like a candy cane, maybe it's time we stop calling it festive cheer and start calling it organized crime." Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we cover the leftover sprouts and chocolate and leave them in a bowl for the Hutton Situation Room. This week, there is an outbreak in Avik. Now, they may just be pulling a massive sickie so they don't have to get back to work, but we can't take any chances. There's investment in Barnard Star. Who would have guessed that? Apart from everyone. We are at war with G99-49 and something crinkly. G99-49 Life Industry and G99-49. There is also a war with Federal Reclamation Company and HR1425. And there's an election with the CIA in Guy. But what does it all mean? Well, if you want to trade, then trade to Barnard Star for maximum profit. If you want to shoot things, then shoot them for Hutton in G99-49 or HR1425. If you want to mission run, then mission run in Guy. Guy. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit. Who was unwrapping booze under the desk? I heard one of you.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Sorry.
How was it? It was you then.
I want to know why you're putting the sprouts.
A little
why are you putting the sprouts and the chocolate together? Are you wrapping them up in tinfoil as well?
No, we ran out of Ferrero Rocher and the ambassador's back soon.
No, what you do is you roll them around in chocolate till they're covered in chocolate. And then you get a few of them and you leave them in a wee bowl and just let people help themselves.
Fiendish.
Fiendish, it is fiendish.
If you use melted chocolate with bits of cornflake in, you can actually rewrap them just like Ferrero Rocher, I am reliably informed.
Why is it green inside?
Oh, Ambassador, you spoil us.
Yeah, but who hands out Ferrero Rocher on Halloween? I mean, come on.
Nobody, the chocolate-covered sprouts. Trick or treat!
Mainly trick. Yep. There's always one weirdo that goes,
Yes. So, how is everybody?
We are here. We have managed.
Yes. That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
I am mainly here.
I refuse to answer that.
we're not asking you. We know just exactly how good you are.
Yeah. It's just, what bit fell off of you in January?
Several.
This week I've been defined as a Class B rally car with a massive turbo lag. I've started and I'm increasing speed, but it won't really take off until maybe next week.
Yes.
In the meantime, did someone say January?
Yes.
I think several people did.
That means I hope everyone had a very happy Empire Day last Friday.
I forgot about this.
For everyone else, including Radio Raxler, happy New Year.
That reminds me, I have to take the bunting down.
You shouldn't have shoved it so far up there. It'll work its own
way. Yeah, I know, but it's on a string. I figured if I get a hook onto the wall, I can just run and pull it that way.
Oh, boy. So, did we all have a good break? Are we all feeling relaxed and rested? Or, sorry, yeah. Rephrase that question. Were we all feeling relaxed and rested before we started back into work?
Yes, I really did. I had a lovely time.
I had just... Sorry.
I still am, but I don't work.
Oh, I had just got used to the lifestyle. I thought, do you know what? It would be good to be retired. And then it was like, no, you're not back to work. Hurry up.
Yeah, we had the joyful, happy coincidence, serendipitous fact, fortune of all of our family visits were just before Christmas. So then we had a full 10 days to recover from it.
Oh, my God.
I've still got to do one of mine. Nice.
Living the dream.
I know.
You still got to visit somebody, Flossie?
Yeah, my sister and my brother over Teesside, but we were going to go last weekend, but the snow stopped us.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse.
Don't look too hopeful for this weekend.
No. Nope. Don't even try.
We might make it for Easter, you never know.
We have not had any snow in Glasgow.
No? Wow. No,
north of us, south of us, blizzards.
Do you know, statistically, you're more likely to get snow in March than you are in December.
More likely,
which means that statistically, you're actually more likely to have a white Easter than a white Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like white chocolate.
Yeah. Tell that to Senator Wagar, who's under 3 feet of snow up in the Highlands somewhere.
Youch.
Yeah. So it's... I know you guys have got some snow, and then up there they have got... I think it was... up to 50 centimetres, followed by up to 30 centimetres, followed by another up to 30 centimetres. So it just kept piling on. So, yeah, it's been a bit wild up that way.
Doesn't usually last long here because we're on a peninsula.
Yeah.
It's a bit in between where my relatives are and where we are, the Pennines.
At the continent.
That always gets a lot of snow, the main road over the top.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The snow gates closed.
Well, we got snow here Monday night and everybody knew it was coming and it was bitterly cold, so there was no chance it wasn't going to stick. And sure enough, it started around lunchtime on the Monday and kept snowing way onto the night. So it was only half an inch or so, but there was lots of snow lying. And all the cars were crushing it down and it was freezing up, so all the roads were like skating rinks.
Yes.
So guess what our local council gritted?
Oh, no.
Nothing.
They couldn't get the lorries out, could they? It was too slippy.
No, they couldn't get the lorries out because they've got no money. I'm not sure where it all went, but they've got no money.
Yeah, it went on buying lorries, but not fueling them.
Well, apparently they lost over £20 million on HS2 somehow, even though it didn't happen and they didn't spend anything on it. So, good figure.
Okay, yeah.
It's one of them.
Okay. Yeah, it's maybe funding they were counting on that they're now not getting.
No, it's fun. I don't know what's going on with it, but I don't want to get political. Sorry, I'll stop now.
Okay.
But I'm not going to say where I live because it keeps it a bit safe.
There may have been issues somewhere in the New Forest based on a walk where I went recently and one of the salt bins had been opened by some of the local ponies and
really
enjoying licking the salt out of the grate. may have been less effective.
Out the other end, it'll help the ice their fields.
I was doing something similar with chocolate bars on Sunday night. there's chocolate in it somewhere. Here's a question for you. Did they give the grit lorries down your way names, what they do in Scotland?
Yeah. Yes. At least in some areas.
Aye.
I saw something about that, Gary Gritter.
Gary Gritter, aye. Although that's not so great. Now, there used to be Andy McFlurry was one of those as well. Mm. Andy Flurry, aye. There was a Lewis Capaldi one. It was Lou Ice something. like, you know,
I'm not going near anything that's blue ice. That sounds too much like yellow snow.
Yeah. So yeah, there was a few Scottish Grit lorries with fancy names this year.
Yeah. I'm not sure they bother naming them around here because they never leave the flipping depot. Oh, sorry, I've done that one already, haven't I, sir?
You've done that one already. Yes, you've. Yes. I'm just going to have a wee look.
So I guess now that we've done the snow news, we should do the frontier news. Have we had a live stream since?
Do we ever have one?
No, especially not when they're all on holiday. They've got more sense, haven't they?
Don't think they've done any announcements or anything. I think
without holidays, they don't have one, no.
No, no holidays, no announcements, no updates, no recorded streams, nothing happening. It's a dead game, isn't it?
Here we go. I found Gritney Spears, Sleetwood Mac. This one I do like. Spready Van Halen, Gritalica, Calvin Harris, Sweet Child O'Brien, and Gritty McGritface.
Of course.
Yes. Basil Salty, Chili Connolly.
That reminds me, talking of naming things, I want a name for my Caspian for DW3.
wrong way's right way.
So you need a name for your Caspian, let's have a think.
Oh. Yeah, we could throw it over to the audience.
Anybody got any good names?
Explorer face.
A Caspian explorer.
Yes, is it for Flossy?
Shippy McShipface.
And a prize will be awarded to the winner. Well, we say prize. It's something we found on the cargo bay down in cubicle 3.
So. Yeah. I'll be able to complete my application. And once I've worked out how to use something like Coriolis as well. Yeah, so such a lot of information for this thing.
Mm. But back to that question at Orwell point earlier, I think all we know is that the Pilots Federation are working on operations and they haven't said anything this year yet, unless it was on Galtwitch, which I haven't checked. But
not seen or heard of anything, but could have missed it.
Yeah, I've not seen anything
either. And I've started a CG, so...
Yeah. And, I mean, they'll have stuff coming up in the next few weeks, so they should have anyway for... operations.
Is it middle of February or something next thing?
I can't remember the date. I thought it was like the 20th of January or something, but I could be wrong. I often have.
Yeah, I think they've just announced. Well, they announced Distant Worlds 3, which is a thing.
Yes, yeah. I'm not panicking.
Where are they going for this one?
We don't know. I believe
it's a closely guarded secret.
They always keep all the waypoints secret until one away. And the final destination, we find out when we get there.
Yeah. I suppose that helps to cut down the chance of people ambushing them and just being rotten.
Yeah, that's the theory.
It looks like there may be another CG like there was last time, because this CG, well, I haven't told you about it yet, have I? But
nope.
It looks like we may be building another station somewhere out there.
Ooh.
So Caspian names thus far, we've got the Edge Runner, we've got To Boldly Floss.
Yeah.
That's very close to one I nearly put. I had to boldly go.
And we've got no mugs on board.
No, you don't want to do that. You want to put no mugs left in this vehicle overnight.
Yes. Yeah. Flossy McFloss face.
Some good ideas there. Thank you, everybody.
I do like that. No mugs left in this ship overnight.
Yeah.
That that vehicle limited to 55 light years.
How's my flying?
Yes. Oh, how's my flying? Yes.
Just call 1-800. 0800 Hutton. Yeah.
Be careful how we answer that.
Yeah, 1-800-MUG-OFF.
We did have a number of suggestions in our radio chat that we've got, but I'm not sure how many of them are safe to air.
Most of them are if you've got your innocence hat on.
Yes.
A few of them you could potentially misunderstand to mean something far ruder than was intended.
Yes.
Well, at least I'm sure that Dead Meat didn't mean anything rude by those several ones.
Oh, no. Certainly not.
And I'm absolutely certain that it was short for analysis when he was talking about that probe.
Yeah. I think I'll pass on that one.
I'm not taking it off you. I know where it's been.
Probing some planets somewhere.
Long as that's all it's been probing.
Is that smell of methane? Or ammonia?
Oh, God. Oh.
Maybe we should move on.
I think
we have any space maybe. News this week?
Maybe we should move on. Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, okay, yeah. We should
maybe
move on.
About it. We should move on.
Yeah.
Should we
right.
explore the worlds of space news?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, what do we have in space news?
It gets this shorter every time. One,
yeah, does what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I only stuck two in because people always put extra ones in, and then I'm going, "Oh, I should take one out then." And
I know I meant to put two in,
and then nobody added anything. So yeah, this first one, you guys probably know more about it than me, to be fair. But the new NASA chief has said that Texas is going to get, may get an Orion capsule rather than the Space Shuttle Discovery. Because to move the Space Shuttle Discovery, you'd have to cut it into bits and ruin it.
But, it would be great in Texas. It's bigger.
Yeah.
So wait, what are they getting then? That looks like a picture of what they're not getting.
That's Orion capsule. They're not getting. I think it's going to be an Orion capsule.
Orion capsule picture.
I think it's going to be the one from the mission next month.
Next month, yeah, right. That's the one.
Yeah.
No, the only other pictures
I'm still scrolling.
There's down at the bottom. There's the fantastic 747 carrier. That they did. And I still can't quite get past the craziness of this design. What can we do? Oh, we'll stick it on the back of an aeroplane.
Don't forget that the shuttle was designed to be launched in essentially that configuration. So,
wow. Yeah.
Not on a 747, but on a big orange tank with a booster on each side. So it's essentially the same layout.
Yeah.
The aerodynamics of the shuttle and the actual hard points for attaching the shuttle are perfect for it.
I understand it's
very aerodynamic.
But it's also then like it changes the profile of the aircraft dramatically. Or imagine you're carrying a rucksack and you put all of the heavy bits at the top, you're more likely to fall over.
but it's directly balanced above the wings. And those 747 cargos can carry a surprising amount of cargo. So
they can, but your COG, your point of rotation is around the midwing.
The cog is a little high, but
unless they've ballasted it in the bottom,
possibly. I have no idea. I need very to go heavy away tires. And look at this.
slightly tangentially, though, related to aeroplane ballast, I did hear a thing a while ago. Our fishing industry exports are such that if you ever take a commercial flight to China, you will almost certainly be sat above a hold full of live crabs.
Wow!
So apparently they do have substantial cargo space in the bottom.
All praying that the plane crashes into the sea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bad for you, excellent for them. The
quirky one on cargo.
To put a lot of heavy stuff in the bottom.
Oh, yeah. If you've ever watched them loading it, there's a huge amount of space. There's more space in the cargo bay than there is in the passenger compartment on most of them, or at least similar amounts. Yeah. But the quirky one on cargo is they get paid for actual commercial cargo, which means that a lot of the time when your luggage is unavoidably delayed, it's because there wasn't enough space in the hold after the paid cargo to fit the passenger cargo. Yeah. Because if they don't ship the paid cargo on time, they lose money. If they don't ship your bags on time, well, that's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, if you scroll further down that article, there is a fantastic picture of a space shuttle being held on a sort of rig.
It's by a hover shuttle.
Ooh. It's a hover shuttle. It's quite an unusual picture of one.
Yeah.
If you want, just in the studio, if you wanted to show the actual Orion capsule, I put a link to a picture of it.
Fantastic.
So if you quickly wang that into the space news, if you want to show the listeners the actual...
I shall see what I can do.
It's like the pointy bit of a rocket. There you are. That's what I was looking for.
I should be able to go that.
Senator John Cornyn and Ted Cruz. Who else?
There we go.
They were the two that
there.
Wanted that's an Orion capsule.
In an Orion capsule about...
with protective balloons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh no, it's celebrating. So, but the in an article about the Orion capsule, which contained no images of an Orion capsule.
Yes. I assume that the Orion capsule has the same. Stability features as the Apollo capsule, then, if it's got those buoyancy bags on the top. They have two stable ways of floating, stable one and stable two, one of which is the right way up, and the other of which involves deploying ballast bags like that at the top to ensure that they become the right way up.
Wow.
Yeah. Apparently it's not fun for the, back in the Apollo days, it was not fun for the pilots who were basically strapped to the ceiling if it floated the wrong way up.
It floated the wrong way up, pointing to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, pointy end down, wide end up, stable.
Yes.
Great design. Bugger.
So it looks like, let's have a look. The other retired shuttles, Atlantis, Endeavour and Enterprise, apparently was the test vehicle, which never reached space, are on display at museums of Florida, California and New York City, respectively. Two other shuttles, Challenger and Columbia, were lost in tragic space accidents, which we all know about, in 1986 and 2003, respectively. Mm-hmm. So there you are. So, yeah, they only really had, six of them?
Yeah, pretty much.
I always imagined it was more, but Iron, you read the names.
No, they recycled them fairly fast. Yeah, yeah. They recycled them fairly fast. I mean, it was meant to be about 2 weeks, and it turned into about 6 months, I think.
Yeah, it was never going to be 2 weeks.
No, the thermal tiles were the big problem, or the thermal insulation layer. They switched away from tiles after a while, but even so, it took way more stress on re-entry than they were anticipating.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's all the black bits on the bottom.
By Columbia,
And that's all the black stuff on the bottom. It used to be, I remember seeing it was like foam tiles. It wasn't even, I don't even think it was ceramic, was it? It was some kind of foam.
They were composite multi-layer things that were incredibly high-tech and incredibly good at what they did, except that one of the things that they did that they weren't supposed to did was fall off.
Fall off, yeah. That wasn't great.
So after every flight, every single tile needed to be manually inspected to make sure it was in good condition and still properly affixed.
Mm.
Every single tile.
Yes.
And there were quite a few of them.
Yeah. And I mean, you get good at it, but it would still take time.
Space shuttle. Let's see how many there were. About 25,000.
Is that all?
Nope. Between 25 and 30,000 tiles, depending on what
model it was. That's more like it.
Manually inspected between flights.
Yes. Yeah, that one's okay.
And And most of them were
okay.
I've had jobs
basically
like that.
It was that fast. But the worst thing is, if they did need replacing, they were all unique. Most of them were on curved surfaces.
That would have to be made.
Yeah. So even if they got spares, you don't just go over to the box and grab one. You go over to box 7,302 to get the right size and shape.
Yeah.
And then you get back to the shuttle with your sticky gun and you go, oh, should have been 7,203 instead. Back we go.
Yeah, fantastic things. But, I mean, they did the job. They were, you know.
Mm. Mostly.
It was up. It was dropped. Yeah, mostly.
Apart from the one time they didn't.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And they did also, remember, it was the space shuttle that allowed them to get back up to the space shuttle that launched the Hubble telescope.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the space.
And repaired it several times.
Went up and repaired it, gave it update.
Fitted its spectacles after it had been to Specsavers.
Yeah, give it a pair of glasses so it could see properly, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they're amazing things.
New computers, new gyros, they're all sorts to it. It's an incredible mission. Yeah.
Do you remember the Russians had one as well, didn't they?
The Buran.
Yeah.
It was actually in one way better than the space shuttle. It was capable of uncrewed flight, completely automated.
Wow.
It was so good. It flew exactly twice and then never again.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of those were orbital flights.
Mm. So they kind of proved their point and then put it away?
No, they just ran out of money.
It was the same with Konkordsky.
Yeah. Konkordsky flew for a while.
Yeah.
Until it fell apart at an air show.
Well, yeah, but then Concorde didn't do much better in Paris that time, so.
Yeah. Although, I was going to say...
I'd say it probably fared a bit better. Like, it still had most of its bits attached, whereas Konkordsky literally fell to bits in the air. I love the rumours about that it was all stolen designs of Concorde that they'd abandoned because it wasn't strong enough. Anywho, we've managed to make this one story last a surprising amount of time.
We have. That's been great, hasn't it?
On the subject of Buran.
Maybe this is...
Pictures of Buran. Current pictures of Buran. In an abandoned workhouse in Kazakhstan.
Is this on the feed?
Yeah, if you look at the
Twitch, I'm just jumping into Twitch now. Hold on,
it's so sad.
Twitch feed, can you believe that?
You can see how similar it was design wise. It's even got tiles. Oh, falling off.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad. Yeah, a Western journalist went across a few years ago and found out where it was in Kazakhstan and. Obtained permission to go in and take some pictures, including internal.
So the Russians
ones.
Don't own it anymore. It's Kazakhstan who own it now.
Well, I'm not sure who owns it, but it's physically in Kazakhstan. So,
yeah, because the whole
find
space
Russian
city thing is in Kazakhstan, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, look at the consoles. Mm. Look at that. That's.
There's the booster, which looks remarkably similar
to the booster.
Booster.
Yep.
Oh. The whole of complex is abandoned.
Yeah. Look at it as well. It's a massive complex. No, it's a bit sad.
Yeah.
It does look different, though. It's got a longer nose or something.
Oh, yeah. It was... if you see the two side by side, they are... significantly different.
Yeah.
But it was inspired by rather than copied from.
Yes. Yes. Aye. Well, there we go. Right. But
so,
you could send that to Texas. They wouldn't know the difference.
It's bigger.
It's bigger. Oh,
they'd be happy.
Yeah, they'd love it. So the next one is NASA's first crewed lunar mission, which is going to be Artemis 2. So they've done a kind of... So they went through the whole thing of getting up, getting their suits on, getting into the ship and all that. They did everything short of a launch, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so they've been through that. And Artemis 2 is going to be the one. So it'll send a crew to the moon. So they will orbit the moon and then to Earth, but they won't land. So it's to test all the systems and things like that.
So it's an Apollo 8 rerun.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much it's Apollo 8.
Yes.
So that's it. They've all been on. I think they've possibly got a wee bit more space than Apollo 8 had. I think Artemis is a bit bigger, isn't
it? Yeah, it's much, much bigger. Well, for one thing, there's four of them rather than three. But...
Yeah. Yeah, but look at the woman on the right's only wee. You could have fitted her.
Yeah, but the bloke on the left's freaking enormous.
But I think...
On average, I think they're about the same size.
Yeah, average is out. But I think Dragon Capsule can take, what, seven?
Yes. But it's similar size to the Apollo the Orion capsule, but Orion is designed for long-duration flight.
Yeah.
It can support people for weeks bordering on a month or more.
Wow.
I think the design criteria is like 4 to 6 weeks from memory.
Okay. I don't think they're going to be up there that long.
No. Well, I don't know how long the mission's planned for, but a moon flight is a week or so.
Yeah, because it's a couple of days getting up to speed around the Earth, isn't it? And then slingshot out to the moon, capture into its orbit, and then bits of that, and then it'll be back again.
I've not seen a mission profile for it. But yeah, it's usually up to orbit, go around the Earth a couple of times while you check out everything's working. 2 to 3 days transfer to the moon, orbit that for a little while, then 2 to 3 days transfer back and then land.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be amazing. People going back to the moon will be something else. Yeah, and I think that one's due to launch. They're saying the earliest it's due to launch is February the 5th. So, you know, very soon.
Mm, yeah, less than a month now.
Yeah, which is massively exciting.
Mm. Unfortunately,
yeah,
Starship's a little behind schedule, and that's the landing vehicle.
Yes. Yes. So what are they sending this thing up on?
It's going up on an SLS, Space Launch System.
Okay.
A huge non-reusable rocket that's propping up the US space economy.
Yeah, of course it is. It's
a great rocket. It's just not reusable.
Yeah.
Sadly.
I think the thing with Starship as well is it's going to land and then take off again, isn't it? The whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not like they're going to detach a lander and send that down.
It is the lander. They're going to the landing mission, which is Artemis 3, I want to say. The mission plan is that they go up in an Orion on an SLS, fly to the moon in the Orion ship. At the moon, they will rendezvous with a Starship, which was launched on a BFR, or whatever they're calling the booster these days, refueled in Earth orbit, flown out to the moon. Then it will still have enough fuel to rendezvous with the Orion, transfer the landing crew, go down to the surface, spend a little bit of time there, fly back up, rendezvous with the Orion capsule, then they will come back on the Orion capsule and leave the Starship in moon orbit.
Okay.
And then the next crew landing will do the same again with the same Starship.
With the same Starship. So are they all going, or is this going to be one of these things where one poor soul gets left behind? Like Michael Collins in Apollo 11?
Yeah, loneliest man in the world, or off the world in that case. I don't know, to be honest. I would guess they're going to leave somebody behind on Orion, because it's makes sense, but I don't know. I mean, Starship can take, what is it, 200 people?
Jeez.
So, not in the configuration they're using for the moon landing, but...
No, God, no.
But it's a big craft. It could certainly take all four of them down if that was the plan. But I think they will probably leave somebody back up on the other ship. It's useful for contingencies in case of needing manual control.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you were actually building a moon base, which is what they intend to do, they're going to build a moon base at some point. Mm-hmm. People doing that. Starship would be an excellent, Starship would be an excellent vehicle for carrying cargo up there.
Yep.
You know, you just take up prefabricated bits of building, you know, and fly it out because it's enormous.
No. You build it out of regolith. The Chinese, one of their 2026 missions is going to be in situ resource utilization, using regolith to make concrete to make 3D printable buildings.
Okay. I mean, you're going to need some water.
On a very small scale, as a proof of. Well, you need something. Although, an interesting quirk is that it has been pointed out that astronaut pee is very effective for binding regolith together into concrete.
Fair enough.
It was met with some negativity in certain circles, but apparently it does work.
You will have a moon base, but it'll be...
Chronic lack of imagination.
it'll have a sort of yellow tinge to it and smell awful when you finally move in. Oh, no!
There would be gas-tight liners inside it. It's for structural rigidity and micrometeorite protection and radiation protection. Rather than they use it to build the tent.
Yes. Aye, so it covers a tent or something, doesn't it? Or a bag?
Well, that is a recommended and likely way of doing it. I mean, a bit more than just a bag or a tent, because it's got to hold, well, full atmospheric pressure of whatever they use, probably at least 5 psi.
Yeah.
Which is quite a lot in a balloon. But still, some sort of... something similar to the inflatable space modules that they've flown for the ISS
would be ideal. Yeah.
And
they
tested them
and then left them, didn't they?
They tested it, and then Bigelow Aerospace got caught by COVID shutdown and went bust.
Ah, okay.
So it's still attached because they can't detach it. But let's say it's no longer under warranty because the supplier has gone bust.
Yes.
So they don't use it because it's not... rated for human occupancy.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame.
Yeah. Although it's not much longer before that thing comes down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it won't be long at all, will it?
Yeah. So it all comes crashing down.
Hopefully, put Nemo.
Yes, hopefully. So there we go. But yeah, it's so people getting back to the moon, you know what I mean? That's astonishing.
It's great.
Yeah,
sure, it does feel a bit too lots like of landings going... in my lifetime.
Well, technically two lots of landings in mine as well, because I think the last landings were, was it
1974?
74. Oh, I was three by then, not a problem.
Yeah, so was I.
Would it be remiss to say it feels like we're dipping into a Cold War at the same time? So it kind of very much like the space race era of sorts.
Well, that might move things along a bit.
Yeah,
I hope it stays cold.
Again.
Yes.
We're getting political again.
Yeah, we've done it again. Sorry. I did the thing.
Yeah.
Don't do the thing.
Don't do things. You know better than that.
It's Lave Radio where they do the thing. This is Hutton Radio where we don't do the thing.
Wait, we don't do what now?
The thing. I think it involves Flossie's protein.
Anything really?
Aardvark!
Aardvark!
When you don't know where to get more space news.
Can I just jump in to do the first part of this?
Do we have a typo of the week?
Oh, no. Well, do we?
Well, it was yours. Yes. So it's yours. Do it.
Typo of the week is noackered.
Noackered. What does that mean?
It means tired, worn out, and making basic typing errors.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
I can use it in a sentence. Noackered is a great word.
And do we have a word of the week?
I don't think we need one, but yes, we do. The word of the week this week is Pingu essence.
Pingu essence. And what does that mean?
It's the smell of penguins. No.
They're using penguins to make concrete in the moon, you know.
The process of becoming fat or corpulent.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Oh, you just watch me. During the break, the radio team have undergone a bit of penguin essence. Pingu essence. Sorry, I'm changing.
I'm assuming after that noise, someone's feeling a bit less pingu essence.
Newt,
newt. Newt,
newt. He used to be the food all the time.
I'm gonna, you know what, I'm gonna put the word of the week up on the headline.
Yes. It's probably headline. Safer if they can see it rather than hear it.
There you go.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I'm feeling a little bit pinguescent after Christmas.
Yes.
I realised it was about 3 kilograms. I managed to pinguescence. What's the
pinguess?
The noun
pinguess.
Yeah.
Yes. That's 6 tubs of roses, isn't it?
Yes, with gravy.
Funny you should say that. we ordered a fairly small box of biscuits for Christmas, because you've got to buy a box of chalky biscuits.
Yes.
So we found a 350-gram box of chalky biscuits.
Did you? Set was it up six?
No, I don't know, because Tesco were out of stock of that one, so they shipped us a different one instead. Was 500 gram.
But it
was slightly cheaper. So because it was slightly cheaper and they wanted to make up the value for us, they shipped us 2.
Okay, so you had a box each, is what I'm hearing.
So I'm feeling a little bit pinguescent after Christmas.
I'm not surprised you're feeling pinguescent. I got a new book of words as a birthday present when I was off. I was very impressed. It was like, so I've got lots of new words.
I don't know what it's like in Scotland, but in England, most books are made of words.
No, this is a book of words.
Yeah, a book of words.
A book of words. A book of rare, unused, and unloved words. I think it says it's called. Here we are. This is a thing of beauty. It is the unique, unloved, and unusual words. Discover more than 900 little-known words to enrich and extend your English vocabulary.
And then you spell them wrong and we make up our own words.
Yeah, exactly.
Pinguescently.
I say you. I mean me. Certificated apparently isn't a word. I don't know how long I've been using it.
It sounds valid to me. Certificated, given a certificate. Yeah. I mean, who'd want to use certified when you've got certificated?
Yeah.
I think certificated is a much better word.
It is now. It's a word now.
It's much more better.
Well, it definitely feels more like somebody's used one of those big red ink stamps on your forehead, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get certification, so if you certify something and it's... You know,
it's certificated.
Yeah.
You've given it...
Apparently certified means that you're qualified and in the sense that you've got a certificate, and if you're certificated, it means you're literally in the act of being given a certificate.
Wow.
Surely that's your being certificated rather than you are certificated.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've just been certificated.
Just put us all right.
You wordsmith, you. I've got some belters here, Gary, so you're going to like this.
I have the internet.
Do you?
Genetified.
I've been thinking of getting that. Do you find it useful?
Yeah, do you want to move to the next section? You'll find out. Welcome to Space Facts, where this week we looked around for people looking studious enough to take a look back at people looking up.
at the sky. It's a brief history of astronomy to celebrate the giants upon whose shoulders we stand. Or, well, Universal Cartographics does. We're the pilots out there actually using whatever amphigory they draw on our galaxy maps. In any case, fact number one. The earliest known record of any sort of astronomy dates back to the year minus 1000. In Assyrio-Babylonian records from ancient Mesopotamia on Sol 3, alongside their tables of base 60 fractions and prime numbers, are documented celestial cycles, including star catalogues and eclipses. Despite having no optical equipment and thus being unable to see the difference between a star and a planet reflecting light from a sol, the ancient records do classify planets as wandering objects having been observed moving across the sky, where distant stars remain stationary. This wandering object class does appear to contain sols 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. Fact number 2. Still well before the advent of optical equipment, the next major advances in astronomy were mathematical, where around the year minus 200, some Greeks by the names Eudoxus, Aristotle and Ptolemy developed an intricate epicyclic model with coordinates centred around Sol 3. This was published in a big reference book called the Almagest, and was so effective that it became the standard text for the best part of 2 millennia. Until the first sol-centred model was proposed in 1543 by someone named Copernicus. Or is that Copernicus? Well, either way, fact number 3.
I'm totally going to refer to him as Copernicus from now on.
I always have done.
In fact, I think even if you include his first name, I think he's named Nickers Copernicus. Or is that Nicholas?
Nicholas. Yeah, but their heat transfer system, he used to get quite hot down there, so.
Nicholas,
I don't
Copper think that Nickers.
Was
Nick.
I don't think his first name was Nickers. I think it was Nickel Arse. Oh, Nickel Arse Copper Nickers, Nickel, right.
Yes.
So that's not the person on the screen, because fact number 3 is this, that the soul-centred idea didn't really catch on, though, until 1609, when astronomy was supercharged forwards by Galileo Galilei, who is on the screen, and Johannes Kepler, who is not on the screen. The notion of a telescope first appeared in a Dutch patent by Hans Lippershey in 1608, the year before, about which Galileo first heard in 1609, and by 1610 he had built himself a high magnification version for looking at the sky. That was around 20 to 30 times magnification at the time. With this telescope, Galileo was able to see geographical features of Sol 3a, moons of Sol 5, orbital phases of Sol 2, and many more stars in the galaxy than anyone had ever noticed without a lens. Simultaneously, Kepler was busy working on his laws of ellipses, equal areas and harmonies, the three laws of planetary motion, which eventually replaced the old epicyclic models 10 years later, by around 1619. Fact number 4. The next few centuries saw gradually improving attempts at conducting all-sky surveys. Large 18th to 19th century systematic efforts by John Herschel and Charles Messier improved global star catalogues a lot, but weren't photographic and tended to focus more on quantity than quality. The Astrographic Catalogue in 1887 was the first global survey attempt at a photographic all-sky chart, but its data were still low quality with non-uniform photographs. The first truly modern high-quality uniform photographic project was the Palomar Observatory Sky Survey from 1949 to 1958, using a 48-inch telescope. If you don't know inches, that's around 7 bananas. Further surveys in decades to follow were then based around different light frequencies, the nearest visible being the 2-micron all-sky survey, or 2MAS, around the year 2000. Speaking of light frequencies, fact number 5. Going back to the 1860s for a moment, the first use of spectroscopy to categorise the stars by spectral class and determine their elemental composition
was by Angelo Secchi at the Collegio Romano in Italy, based on Kirchhoff and Bunsen's earlier discovery that different elements emit different spectral frequencies. This then formed the basis for the OBAFGKM main sequence, devised by Annie Jump Cannon around 1901 to 1912. Spectroscopy is also how we see Doppler shifts in light frequency, from which we can infer motion. It's how we can probate temperature, density, and ionization, and at UV and X-ray frequencies, we can detect hot plasma, stellar winds, and accretion disks. And maybe the other picture, which Litho hasn't shown you yet.
It's just a lead. There you go.
Yeah, I really wanted people to see the different elements down the side with the patterns there. So, but that's it.
That's why sodium lights are yellow, isn't it? The old street lights.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how they run the light, electricity through it, and it goes that out my words.
They run electricity through it, it gets all excited, and then when it de-excites, it gives off yellow light.
And you do it in reverse to say that's got sodium in it, yes?
Well, no, you look at the colour of the light it's giving off, and if it matches off with the yellow light that sodium gives off, then you know it was sodium.
And if it's that full pattern, but it's moving slightly to the left, but it's the same pattern, then the sodium's moving away from you. You see? Yeah.
And if it's moving away from you, it's probably a long way away in space.
Absorption spectra and emission spectra, but then you've also got Doppler shift of whether it's going away or towards.
Yeah, the stuff on screen are all emission spectra, but there's also the fact that you'll tend, on any given telescope, to only have one narrow section of the light frequencies that it can see, so you won't see all of those lines, you'll just see one particular grouping, which makes it really good fun.
They kind of do, every element's got its own shade of whatever colour, because I think neon works the same way, doesn't it? Neon lights, they're not all neon.
Oh, yeah. Everything does, like you say. Every single element, for every single possible excited to less excited electron state, has a particular wavelength of light that transition emits.
Mm-hmm. And that's how they can identify.
And as Hugh pointed out, there's a similar one for absorbing specific frequencies of light.
Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. That's really interesting. So and that's how you know what a planet's atmosphere is made up of.
Actually, before we play the outro, that first clay tablet-y one, was that Hipparchus that produced that catalogue? Because he was one of the first people to actually write down catalogues of stars.
I didn't see any names from the Mesopotamian era. It was just that relic I could find.
Because amazingly, how Hipparchus did it was, given that they didn't have lenses, was with a tube rather than a telescope, so that he could get accurate locations of them by looking down a sighting tube to see exactly where it was in the sky, measure the angles of the stand that the tube was on. No magnification, but he could point it and get very precise positioning data. And Hipparchus is the one responsible for all of the stars with HIP in their names. That's what they're named after.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot.
I think there's been a modern telescopic survey that's used his name since. I'm not sure about that one.
But yeah, okay.
That's what the HIP stands for, is Hipparchus.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's interesting.
Is it twice as interesting? Well, that was close. I very nearly hit the wrong button then, with the two buttons involved being studio mode to disable my manual control of which images were shown, or stop streaming, which would have dropped us off Twitch completely.
maybe separate those.
They're in a block in OBS, you can't.
Oh, God.
Whew, that was close. So, I think that means it's time for Flossie. Are we ready, Flossie?
No.
I'm ready. Hello, Flossie here with this week's CG News. Yes, the CGs are back. Distant Worlds 3 Deep Space Infrastructure Project. The Distant Worlds Working Group has issued a call for mined and manufactured materials to support the construction of a new deep space facility. Hermine De La Rue, Executive Operative for Deep Space Surveys, stated, "This new project focuses on preparing a remote site for long-range scientific operations. We aim to establish essential infrastructure for survey crews venturing into seldom charted regions. Independent pilots are invited to help lay the foundations for the next era of deep space discovery. Pilots can support this initiative by first signing up at any station with a mission board, before selling bromelite, power generators or thermal cooling units at Surveyor's Reach commodity market in the Array system. This large megaship cannot be seen on the system map, but shows on the navigation panel after entering the system." You may have to do a system scan for a nav beacon first. "And it has multiple large pads." So that's better than the usual megaships. "Commodities sold as part of this initiative will have a 10 times price multiplier. Pilots who register at least one contribution will receive credits, depending on success tier achieved and individual contribution level. Pilots in the top 75% and above of contributions will receive one Class 5 cargo rack, pre-engineered with increased cargo capacity. The campaign began today, the 8th of January 3312, and will run for 9 days. DSS estimates that transporting the materials to the distant final location and completing the station will require several weeks. To be eligible for rewards, pilots must first sign up at any station with a mission board before selling bromelite, power generators or thermal cooling units at Surveyor's Reach commodity market." I think I've already said that. "Be aware that faction state changes and other disruptive events can negatively impact markets and station services and could prevent the initiative from running smoothly." And that's it for this week's CG News.
Flossie told you what to do.
Back from Christmas with some heavy lifting to do. That'll get the weight off us. Right. I guess that means it's time to go over to Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon for their post-festive season digestif of the news.
Galnet News Update, 8th of January, 3312.
The Distant Worlds 3 expedition is planning to establish another deep space facility to support survey and exploration activities. They want your help to make it happen, and they're offering a pre-engineered size 5 cargo rack with increased cargo capacity as an incentive. The expedition hopes to repeat the success of the Distant Worlds 2 expedition in 3305, which established explorers' anchorage close to Sagittarius A's star, in the very heart of the galaxy, which was second only to Jacques Station, which had attempted to jump to Beagle Point 3 years earlier during the original Distant Worlds expedition of 3302, but ended up less than halfway there in the system now known as Colonia. In what's likely to be the first of a number of initiatives, Deep Space Surveys has asked for bromelite, power generators and thermal cooling units to be delivered to the Surveyor's Reach megaship in Alrai, where they will pay 10 times the market rate. If you sign up before starting to deliver, you'll also receive a bonus cash reward in 10 days when the initiative ends, and commanders in the top 75% of participants will also be awarded a pre-engineered size 5 cargo rack. Note that Surveyor's Reach does not show up on the Alrai system map. It's close to Planet 1. It's not yet clear where in the galaxy the new facility will be built, or what it will consist of. Deep Space Surveys has said that it will be several weeks after the initiative ends before the first signs of construction become apparent.
In other news, the Radicoida Thunderdome around HIP 87621 has seen a week of consolidation for Simguru Pranav Antal, who's the first power with two strongholds within a contested 49 systems. Antal also has three fortified and five exploited systems, putting him ahead of Princess Ashling and Emperor Arissa, who are in turn slightly ahead of Yuri Grom and Nakatu Kane. Kane is the only power to have lost ground this week. Senator Petraeus has made modest progress with a new stronghold, leaving Edmund Mahan the only remaining power without one. Once again, none of the seven remaining powers can be eliminated next week, so it seems unlikely that we'll be seeing a resolution to the conflict for quite a few months.
Thank you to Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon.
Wasn't sure who was going
to
do it.
So we don't have to. Shouldn't dig, actually. There's been no news at the moment. At least they've reported on what did happen. So.
It's and a cool-looking megaship, though.
It is, isn't it? And at least they told us that it's hard to find the place you're meant to be dropping the stuff, so people won't panic.
Nice to have more than one large pad.
Oh, just do it. Just do it in open. It's fine. Somebody will shoot down all of the other large craft.
Oh, I don't do open.
No, me neither. So, does anyone have anything else? Or have we come to that point where we just have those three little words that we need to announce to the world?
I thought it was two words. Cool. Happy Snow Day.
Happy Merinium.
That's three little words.
I think it's time for those three little words.
I think it's time for the three words. Yeah, it's all going
for the mug!
For the mug!
What? I heard the meow!
Who's joining in?
Journey too long, cargo too small. Profit margins never really mattered at all. We're gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. Loading all the teen out to the brim with the rest for the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, everybody's seen the trucker song. Flossie always seems to crash into the sun. Skibble lights the pilot on the Xbox One. Helping out the frame, you know who leads us well. Trucking across the galaxy, now everybody yell. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Everybody's seen the hurting trucker's song. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
You know just where we're coming from. sing the trucker's song. Give me a large pipe that I can land on, and I'll give you cargo and sing you my song. No point 22 light years to go, cruising to work, no journey too long, no cargo too small. The profit margins never really mattered at all. Gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. So shout it out loud, like you don't even care. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more. Everybody sing the trucker's song. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Everybody sing the trucker's song.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show. Everyone's buggered off now, so why don't you bugger off too?
Seamless.